Seems like everybody's eyes are on presidential politics, and especially with Election Day coming up on the Tuesday. Many are looking at this as one of those elections in which they are holding their nose, regardless of who they are voting for. When you think about presidents of the United States, I think most everybody thinks about recent history and those of the past couple of decades that have been in that particular position as president. However, it's rather interesting to go back in history of time, actually going back some 40 plus years. For many of you, probably not even born during that period of time, back in the mid-70s. And there was an individual who became the president of the United States as an end result of another president resigning due to the Watergate scandal. His name was Gerald Ford. He was a leader who came into his position not only, or an impossible situation, not only once but twice. Because before he was ever made the president of the United States to take over for President Nixon, he had actually replaced the vice president that Nixon had, and that was an individual by the name of Spiro Agnew. He had to, again, go into the situation of replacing that individual as vice president who had to resign due to scandal, and then ultimately had to replace as vice president the president who resigned due to the Watergate scandal. He had died several years ago, and people remembered him and reflected upon his life and reminisced that at a time of incredible difficulty in American history, this was an individual who had exemplified, in their opinion, leadership. You see, before Gerald Ford had ever ascribed to the position of president or even vice president, he had served in Congress for 25 years. Before he was ever a leader, he was what would probably be referred to as a good foot soldier. He was an individual who had made his way and sort of paid his dues. There's a particular expression that sometimes we use that an individual has to chop wood before they ultimately can be the one to tell everybody else what wood needs to be chopped. It's an expression that is generally used for paying your dues. You know, in the 21st century, I don't think I need to make this statement, and it would not go challenged, that leadership is in dire need in society today. We see a lack of it, or we see the wrong examples of it in our world around us. How important is leadership, though, to the church? We know that the importance of leadership should not be lost upon us, as we're only a couple weeks or less than 2 weeks removed from the Feast of Tabernacles and Last Great Day. We should come to an understanding and a realization that leadership within the church and the need to grow in leadership, the need to learn to understand what it means to be a godly leader, is extremely important. One of the reasons why we are going through and have developed, the church has developed, the Christian Leadership Training Program that we will embark on tomorrow, and again, something that the entirety of the church is encompassed in and working on, is that we understand that leadership is extremely important, not only for us now, but ultimately in the future. But in order for us to come to the knowledge and understanding of where we need to be future, we must start working on it now. I want you to turn with me over to Revelation chapter 5. Revelation chapter 5. Revelation chapter 5, and I want you to notice one verse. Verse 10. Revelation chapter 5 and verse 10. This is a verse, regardless of where you were at the feast, it was probably read. It might have been referred to, if not once, perhaps multiple times. Here the statement is made, and have made us kings and priests to our God, and we shall reign on the earth. This verse speaks to the message of leadership. We have just come back from the Feast of Tabernacles, understanding that that thousand-year period is a period of time in which we will be leading with Jesus Christ. what are we doing about that now? That is future reality, but what are we doing about that now? I'd like to address that this afternoon with an understanding that tells us that leadership starts by first and foremost being a foot soldier. Leadership starts by being a foot soldier. Before a general ever came to be, before an officer ever came to be, before an individual of high rank in enlisted personnel came to be, they had to start out as a foot soldier. They had to start out as a private. They had to chop wood for a number of years to bring them to the point where they went on and forward in terms of their training and become a leader to the men around them. As a foot soldier, we have a responsibility with God's help through the Holy Spirit to build ourselves to be in those leadership positions in the kingdom. And so we, in this current day and age, in a sense, are chopping wood. We are chopping wood. I want to read a little excerpt of an article. This is from Being a Leader. It's an excerpt from Leading from Within by Dr. Nancy Huber. She talks about the four characteristics of effective leaders. And she talks about the fact that she considers them foundational. She says they are not traits which you're either born with or not. Neither are they attributes that you might acquire by learning more about them. I believe these essential leader characteristics are choices, she says, that we make. Where have we heard that before? We are faced with choices every day. The choices that we make, in one sense, will determine the destiny of where we go. Think about it from this particular message that I'm giving to you today. The choices that we make will determine the type of leader that we are going to be. She goes on to say that exemplary leaders are passionate, authentic, credible, and ethical. Passionate, authentic, credible, and ethical. She then gives a little bit of a background or a little bit of a thesis on both of those. I won't go through all of what she wrote, but let me share just a little bit. Under passion, she talked about purpose and passion go hand in hand. To be an effective leader, you must first care. If you are going to lead somebody, they need to understand and know that you first and foremost care about them. If they sense that you don't care about them, if you don't have a passion for helping them, then everything you do after that particular point goes nowhere. Secondly, she talked about authenticity. To be authentic is to be genuine. Now, it's another way simply of saying that there can be no hypocrisy. The individual that you are in one particular moment in time is the person you are all the time. As she says, this means being who you are all the time. We use that term in terms of character. The person that you are here is the person that we should be 6 days or 7 days a week. The person that you are in the light is the person that is there in the dark when no one sees. That's essentially what she's saying. That's what authenticity truly is. It's being who you are all the time. She says, we long for genuine, trustworthy interaction where we live and work and we experience fulfillment when our relationship with others are honest, grounded in the truth of who we are. A person has to see the authenticity of our belief system and that nothing will change our belief system. Thirdly, she talked about credibility. If you are to have credibility, you must do what you say you will do. One of the greatest challenges a leader can have is to simply say, we'll do that, and then not do it. Pretty soon, once it's said, you simply say, well, if they said it, you don't really know if it's going to happen or not. And chances are it's not going to happen because they never follow through with it. So again, she talks about credibility. Again, the need to make a promise in action, and if you make that promise, follow through on it. Finally, number four is ethics. He talked about ethics. Ethical leaders have at the center of their belief system a high regard for human worth and dignity. They make decisions and take action in accord with those deeply held values and beliefs. Now, we live from a standpoint of the ethics that our ethics do not change. Our ethics don't roll with the times and how the times may change. That's what we refer to as situation ethics. I will make a decision on how I'm going to respond to something or answer to something or do something based upon the situation. Situation ethics. Being ethical is a choice you make with a belief system which is grounded in service. Who was the ultimate servant that came to earth to serve? It was Jesus Christ. Whose example are we to follow? It is Jesus Christ. So the leadership of Jesus Christ is the leadership that we are to be following. When it comes to ethics, we have to make that choice grounded with a belief system that is based upon service. So again, she talks about the four areas here: the passion, the authenticity, credibility, and ethics. If I were to ask you in the Bible, where would you go to find an example of a foot soldier who embodied these four principles? Where would you go? Now, I'm sure in your mind you may have an idea of who that might be. This afternoon, I'd like to take a look at a particular individual because I believe that he embodies those four areas, that he truly was, before he was a leader, he was ultimately, as we'll see, a foot soldier. He chopped wood. He learned how to lead, and he recognized what he needed to do in order to be an effective leader. The person that I'm speaking of is Joshua. Joshua is an individual that we can look at as leading Israel. His battle conquests are something that you can go back and read about in the book of Joshua. But perhaps what is more important in my mind for what we're talking about today is the molding and the shaping of Joshua as a leader that would take place prior to him taking the baton from Moses. That he would be the one, the second leader after God had brought the children of Israel out of Egypt, that ultimately Joshua would be the ones to bring them into the promised land. Let's look over in Exodus chapter 17, first of all. Exodus chapter 17. I want to take a look at this first area in terms of taking a look at Joshua and what happens and what occurs here. We find a situation here in Exodus chapter 17 in which Amalek is going to come down and fight with Israel. Now, God is going to make the statement here that he, in verse 9, as he said to Moses, to go get Joshua and choose some men and go out and fight with Amalek. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the rod of God in my hand. So Joshua did as Moses said to him, and he fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill. The point being here is that as Moses would raise his hand with that rod, as long as that rod was raised up before the Amalekites, Israel would prevail in the war. What is interesting about this whole story is that Moses goes to Joshua, and Joshua is deeply embedded with what is going on. He's being taught who ultimately is going to win this fight and who's going to win the battle. Verse 10, so Joshua did as Moses said to him and fought with Amalek, and Moses, Aaron, and Hur went up to the top of the hill, and so it was when Moses held up his hand that Israel prevailed, and when he let down his hand, Amalek prevailed. Well, you can only lift up your hand for so long. If you've got a rod in your hand, you can only imagine how heavy that might be. And this battle is going on for some time. Verse 12, but Moses' hands became heavy, so they took a stone and put it under him, and he sat on it. And Aaron and Hur supported his hands, one on one side and one on the other side, and his hands were steady until the going down of the sun. So Joshua defeated Amalek and his people with the edge of the sword. Notice verse 14, this is what's important. Then the Lord said to Moses, write this down for a memorial in the book and recount it in the hearing of Joshua, that I will utterly blot out the remembrance of Amalek from under heaven. Joshua was part of this battle that would take place with Amalek. He was part of understanding what was going on with regards to God fighting the battle for Israel. When it was all said and done, God's command to Moses to rehearse these things for Joshua was part of the training to see that God was ultimately, through Moses, training Joshua so that he would be able to lead Israel. He was showing Joshua that ultimately it was God, it was him, that was going to defeat the enemy. Joshua learned that by watching. It was not just a battle. He saw that they physically could wear down, but as long as they were doing what God said they needed to do, raise that rod and you will prevail. He saw that. And so again, God made clear that Moses was to write that down, to make certain and sure it was recorded so that Joshua would never forget it for future battles that would have to take place when Joshua was leading the nation. Notice over in Exodus chapter 24, we're going to flash forward here a little bit. Exodus chapter 24, there's a situation here where there is a ratifying of the book of the law or the book of the covenant. There is a statement that's made there in verses 1 through 3 that, again, coming before and this ratifying of what was happening and what was occurring was going to take place. You go forward in the chapter here to verse 12, that ultimately here Joshua is going to be taken up with Moses. Now remember, it was Moses who ultimately was going to be coming up to before God, before the glory of God, to again get the stone, the tablets of stone, as we see here in chapter 24. But I want you to notice who it was who was involved with him. This is, again, all part of the teaching and the training of the leadership of Joshua. Verse 12, then the Lord said to Moses, come up to me on the mountain and be there, and I will give you tablets of stone and the law and commandments which I have written that you may teach them. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua. This wasn't just some guy. He didn't just randomly pick somebody out of a crowd. This was his assistant. They were tightly tied together. That was not done by happenstance. That was done by purpose because, again, Joshua was in training for something far greater down the road when he would lead the nation. So Moses arose with his assistant Joshua, and Moses went up to the mountain of the Lord, and he said to the elders, wait for us, right here for us until we come back to you. Indeed, Aaron and Hur are with you. If any man has a difficulty, let him go to them. Then Moses went up into the cloud and mountain, and a cloud covered the mountain. And the rest of the story, again, that you see with regards to the glory of God, the consuming fire in verse 17 that it speaks about. The point that I'm trying to get at is this was a very important point with Moses and God, but you see who was involved with regards to going up the mountain, and it was Joshua, who is referred to again as Moses' assistant. Now I want you to go forward here to Exodus chapter 33. Let's go to Exodus chapter 33. We're going to pick up another little situation here. Perhaps in one sense going back to the glory of God that had appeared on the mountain when Moses was there and the burning of the fire and the things that took place. And perhaps that was still in the back of his mind. But notice here Exodus chapter 33. And here in verse 9, we're going to have a meeting that's going to take place at the tabernacle or at the temple, the tabernacles that's referred to in verse 9. Notice beginning here in verse 9, Exodus chapter 33, and it came to pass when Moses entered the tabernacle that the pillar of cloud descended and stood at the door of the tabernacle, and the Lord talked with Moses. Now the pillar of cloud, again, representative of the glory of God. Verse 10, all the people saw the pillar of cloud standing at the tabernacle door, and all the people rose and worshiped each man in his tent door. So the Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend, and he would return to the camp, but his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, did not depart from the tabernacle. Why? Why? Because ultimately here we go through and see that they all rose and each man went to his tent door, but there is no understanding that that pillar of cloud that was representative of the glory of God had ever left. Joshua knew that. What was happening here was that he had learned that as long as the glory of God is present, you stay. Part of the training was to reaffirm through action the importance of God and his presence. He had seen that with what we saw back in Exodus chapter 18, with the battle that would take place. The understanding and the realization of the glory of God when Moses went up to get the stone tablets. And again, we find it here when he came before the tabernacle. Everybody went back, but he did not depart. He stayed. He waited. The indication was, again, that ultimately the glory of God had not left. It was, again, the reaffirmation of that importance of understanding God's presence and not moving away from his presence. Let's take a look at another example here we find in Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11 and verse 26. We find a situation here. Again, the people are complaining, they are displeased, they are sick and tired of manna, we've had it every possible way we can. We're running out of recipes in the Betty Crocker cookbook with how to cook manna. We crave meat. So God sends the quail. And again, the rest of it, you understand and know that particular story, but I want to pick up just a little snapshot inside of this particular story. I wanted to pick it up in verse 26, Numbers chapter 11. Numbers chapter 11 and verse 26, he says, "But two men had remained in the camp. The name of one was Eldad and the name of the other Medad. And the Spirit rested upon them. Now they were among those listed, but who had not gone out to the tabernacle, yet they prophesied in the camp." So in Joshua's mind, these individuals should not have been doing what they were doing. They did not go to the tabernacle, and yet here they were prophesying in the camp. Verse 27, a young man ran and told Moses and said, "Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp." Now, what was Moses' response? Moses didn't respond. The first one to respond is Joshua. Notice how he responds. "So Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' assistant, one of his choice men, answered and said, 'Moses, my Lord, forbid them.'" Verse 29, "Moses said to him, 'Are you zealous for my sake? Oh, that all the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put his spirit upon them.'" Now, what is not really clear from these particular verses is Joshua's intent. Was he upset and was he truly concerned that they were doing something wrong? Or was there maybe just a little bit of envy on his part that they were prophesying in the camp, doing something that he didn't feel was proper and something that he felt Moses should be doing rather than them? In any case, whatever it was, when you see there in verse 29 that Moses basically corrects him. And the indication we find here is that he took it willingly. There's a lesson to be learned. Again, we're still talking about, again, as it says, Joshua in verse 28, Moses' assistant. He's still a foot soldier. He's still learning. He had to be corrected by the leader. And the lesson is, from time to time, we're going to be wrong and God will have to correct us. The question is not, will he correct us? The question is, how will we accept that? How will we choose to accept the correction? Now, from this particular story, as far as we know, Joshua accepted what Moses said. You know, there's a quote, I don't know who said it, but it goes like this: a real leader faces the music even when he doesn't like the tune. That's true. A real leader faces the music even when he doesn't like the tune. The point being here is, part of the learning process, Joshua had to be corrected. He would ultimately be the leader, as we'll see here in a little bit. But he had to be corrected along the line. Let's go to the final example that I want to bring to you of Joshua's life. And to me, it's the one that encompasses, for me, what it really means to be a leader. There's really three lessons that I'm going to give you at the end of this particular story. And again, I'm talking about the 12 spies that are sent out and what happens and occurs. Now, I'm not going to run through the entire two chapters. It's too long, too much. But I want to kind of hit and highlight the story and then read those particular things that I think are pertinent to help us understand the three lessons that come as an end result of this particular moment in time. In Numbers chapter 13, we find that there is a command that is sent out, verses 1 and 2 that you read about, where God sends out or is commanding the 12 to go out and spy out the land of Canaan. We find that Moses is going to choose those individuals to be sent out. God is looking for a physical report of the land. What is the topography like? How many people are there? Are they young? Are they old? Are they prepared for battle? Are they ready for war? Are they building up their strongholds? Are they nomads, just simply in tents? What is it that we're facing? Chapter 13, verses 26 and 29, we read about the point that they come back and they give the report. The report is not a good report. Oh, they start with the standpoint of saying, yep, the land is exactly the land that flows with milk and honey. It's exactly what God has told us it is. But there's something else that's going on there that we need to understand. There's all these enemies of the land that are there, and there's huge giants in the land, and there's no way we're going to be able to overtake them. You find one of the two that was with Joshua, that being Caleb, who made the statement very clearly in verse 30, where he said, he quieted the people before Moses, said, let us go up at once and take possession, for we are well able to overcome it. His request, his response, his statement is not received very well at all by the congregation. In fact, so much so that they decided that they want to go ahead and have somebody else brought forward to lead them back to Egypt. When these spies come before the congregation, and when the report is given, we see in verses 1 through 5 that they listen to the bad report. And they start crying out and say, let us get someone who's going to lead us back to Egypt. In verse 6, let's pick it up there. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh, who were among those who had spied out the land, tore their clothes, and they spoke to all the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, the land we passed through to spy out is an exceedingly good land. If the Lord delights in us, then he will bring us into this land and give it to us, a land which flows with milk and honey. Only do not rebel against the Lord, nor fear the Lord, fear the people of the land, for they are our bread, their protection has departed from them, and the Lord is with us. Do not fear them. And the congregation said, okay, we're ready to go. No, they did not. The realization was that they picked up the stones and they were ready to stone them to death. They didn't want to hear it. Israel's eyes were on the physical, but Joshua was bringing them back to the spiritual, letting them know that through God, all things are possible. Now, again, as I said before, what is the overall picture here, or the lessons that we learn from this particular story that you already know? There's really three points that I believe are important when it comes back to leadership. What Joshua, the first point we're coming to here, is what Joshua was trying to do is that he was being a leader by reminding them of the big picture. See, Israel was caught up in a moment in time. They were caught up in that snapshot of the report that came back of the giants in the land, of all of the enemies in the land, and it's too much for us to handle. As a leader, Joshua brought them back to the big picture, letting them know that ultimately here, the responsibility is for us to go into the land that God has promised. And if God has promised it for us, he's not going to renege on that promise. Now, how did Joshua know that? Because Joshua had lived it up to that particular point. He had seen it with the battle of the Amalekites at Rephidim. He had seen it with regards to what God had done up to that particular point. He knew that God would intervene. So he had to get their minds on the big picture. The second point we find from this particular story, again, of the 12 spies, is that leaders must also stand up even when it's the unpopular thing to do. You're outnumbered 2-10, or 10-2, 5-1, do the math. You're outnumbered. When they went up against us, they were standing up against their peers. I love this story from the standpoint of young people because it again speaks to peer pressure. These particular individuals were willing to stand up against their peers and say, no, this is not what we should do. We should do what God has told us to do. What's the third point? The third point we find in verse 10. We haven't read that yet. Verse 10. And all the congregation said to stone them with stones. Now the glory of the Lord appeared in the tabernacle of meeting before all the children of God, or children of Israel. Point number three is that as a leader, when you stand up for God, he will stand up for you. You see it very clearly there that when they picked up those stones and were choosing to stone them, they were looking to kill them. God intervened immediately because they had done what he wanted them to do. They had done what God wanted them to do. At the end of everything that goes on here, you see that Moses intercedes for Israel, that God was merciful. He was trying basically to talk God out of what God ultimately wanted to do here. And there is a statement that is made here in verse 36 of Numbers chapter 14. Let's go to it for a moment. He says, now the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land, who returned and made all the congregation complain against him by bringing a bad report of the land, those very men who brought the evil report about the land died by the plague before the Lord. Now, it didn't happen right away. But ultimately it happened because they did not do what God had told them to do. But notice verse 38. But Joshua the son of Nun and Caleb the son of Jephunneh remained alive of the men who went out to spy the land. They remained alive. The reward of being a good foot soldier is that God will stand up for you. They had the ethics. They were authentic. Joshua was an individual. Again, you go on in the story. I don't have time to go there. But Numbers chapter 32, in that particular chapter, you find that there were three tribes that didn't want to cross the Jordan. God's wrath was kindled against them again. And once again, we see that Joshua was spared because what? He wholly obeyed God. The genuineness, the authenticity of his character. Again, the ability to be a leader. Notice Deuteronomy chapter 31. Deuteronomy chapter 31, a statement is made back here in Deuteronomy chapter 31 because we flash forward to the point in which Moses is about, he lets them know at the beginning part of that chapter that he is not going to be crossing over the River Jordan. That ultimately Joshua is going to be the one that is in a sense inaugurated. He is going to be your next leader. And notice the statement that is made here, Deuteronomy chapter 31 and verse 21. He says, then it shall be, when many evils and troubles have come upon you, that this song will testify against them as a witness. For it will not be forgotten in the mouths of their descendants, for I know the inclination of their behavior today, even before I had brought them to the land of which I swore to them. Therefore, Moses wrote this song the same day, taught it to the children of Israel. Then he inaugurated Joshua, the son of Nun, and said, be strong and of good courage, for you shall bring the children of Israel into the land of which I swore to them, and I will be with you. Joshua had come to the particular point in which he had been appointed as Moses' successor. Part of his ability to be a strong leader is that he was a strong foot soldier before he ever got to this particular point in Deuteronomy chapter 31. He witnessed and he saw the power of God. The realization of that was that now he was to be rewarded as a leader of God's people, of the nation of Israel. I want to take you forward here to Joshua chapter 1. Because we find now that the statement is already made here in Joshua chapter 1 that the death of Moses takes place. And as you read there in verse 1, Moses' assistant, that was Joshua, he makes the decree to the nation, letting them know that Moses is dead. He says, essentially in verse 2, there is work to do. We are going to cross over into the Jordan. I want you to notice beginning in verse 6, and again, the statement that is made here. He says, be strong and of good courage, for to this people you shall divide, it's again God speaking, an inheritance, the land which I swore to their fathers to give them. Only be strong and very courageous, that you may observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded you. Do not turn from it to the right hand or to the left, that you may prosper wherever you go. This book of the law shall not depart from your mouth, but you shall meditate in it day and night, that you may observe to do according to all that is written in it. For then you will make your way prosperous, and then you will have good success. Have I not commanded you? Be strong and of good courage. Do not be afraid nor be dismayed, for the Lord your God is with you wherever you go. God had moved Joshua from foot soldier to leader, and he was working with him in that particular transition. Now you have to think of this from the standpoint of Joshua. You had to sense that perhaps God knew that Joshua might be a little nervous because Israel had only known one leader since they had left Egypt. Here he was about to take the reins and work with a people that he had seen to be stubborn, stiff-necked, and rebellious. You have to believe that God knew that because in the verses that I just read to you, verses 6 through 9, he uses the phrase, be strong and of good courage, 3 times. God was essentially telling him, you have moved to the point from foot soldier to leader. Be strong, be courageous, I will be with you. You know, we talked about the 4 qualities at the beginning of good leadership, the passion, the authenticity, the credibility, and the ethics that are required for leadership. I believe that if you take a look at Joshua, you see those 4 characteristics. And perhaps most importantly, as he was giving his final speech to the people at the end of the book of Joshua, we hear the passion in his voice. Turn with me over to Joshua chapter 24. Joshua chapter 24 as we begin to wrap it up. Joshua chapter 24. Notice what he says here beginning in verse 14. He is coming to the point of his physical life ending. He's come as far as he's going to be able to take the nation. Verse 14. And now therefore fear the Lord, serve him in sincerity and in truth, and put away the gods which your fathers served on the other side of the river and in Egypt. Serve the Lord. You can hear the passion in his voice, his desire for them to not ever forget who their God is, who brought them to this particular point, who brought them across and into the land that he had promised to them. Verse 15, and if it seems evil to you to serve the Lord, choose for yourself this day whom you will serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. That one statement in verse 15, I believe, says it all. It covers the passion, it covers the authenticity, the credibility, and the ethics. Israel knew that he was telling them the truth because they had seen him live it. It's interesting when you take a look at the book of Joshua because in the very first verse, he is referred to as Moses' assistant. But in Joshua chapter 24 and verse 29, the last thing we read is that it came to pass after these things that Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. He had moved from the point of being an assistant. He had been placed in that position of leadership, and he had become the servant to lead the children of Israel. the second leader that they would know that would ultimately lead them into the promised land. It is a lesson in my mind, I believe, of leadership. It starts with being a foot soldier. Brethren, leadership is at the core of who we are. We strive for that by the very character of Jesus Christ, and that character that we are to be refining in our lives as we prepare to be kings and priests. Joshua's example as a foot soldier tells us a lot, and it serves us an example of who we need to be as a leader in training. Let's continue on that path. Let's continue to do all we can. Let's continue to keep chopping wood. Let's continue being good foot soldiers.